College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The beer is cold and the wings are hot. You're in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
I mean, we could always do better. Just their very first play of the game was a quick RPO, and that was you could tell, I mean, from that, that was their game plan. I don't think they knew they couldn't protect against us in straight-up pass protection, and they dominated with RPOs and all that kind of stuff and kept us on our toes.
Bills pass rusher A.J. Epineza on the Chiefs' game plan against Bills' defense. Bills' defense had surrendered more points to Kansas City Chiefs last night than any other team this season in the NFL. Blame assessment Monday. Nate, locked in his office for the last almost 8 hours.
Don't talk to me.
Not talking to anybody, avoiding contact, staying caffeinated, and joining us now in the sports bar with thoughts from last night. And I just keep going back to the point, Nate, that it is extremely inconvenient that the Bills have a top three quarterback in Josh Allen that is playing in the Patrick Mahomes era.
Yeah, sucks. Yeah, I've got my office lights dimmed down, you know, just in case anybody walks by. They don't even really pop in. They just assume I'm not here. Yeah, you know, it's tough in the aftermath of it. I haven't, you know, really had the time to fully digest and, you know, go do the autopsy of this whole thing. And, it, you know, in time I will, I'm sure. At the end of the day, it just what it came down to is what it kind of always comes down to with the Chiefs, which is, you know, coaching, just being better prepared than the Bills were. And even even though I think they were better prepared, even though I think, you know, the two big calls in that game went against the Bills that I think were very obvious. Another, you know, conversation for another day about the league and review. And if you can't get reviews right, then what the hell's the point of it all? But, you know, all this said, calls going against them and being outcoached again, and they had the lead after dropping 21-10 late in the first half. They get a 22-21 lead, get a big stop coming out of the half, and you know, they just didn't make enough plays, and I think that ends up being the sort of story of this team in this era of dominance in Kansas City. Is they just know that in the crunch time, that you knew this game was going to come down to the final 5 minutes. I said it to you guys last week on Friday when I was with you, or Thursday or Monday, whenever I was with you last week, right? It was like, I think I said to you guys, it's going to be a, you know, a 5 minute game. The first 55 minutes is going to be nip and tuck back and forth. It was, and it came down to the final 5 minutes, and, you know, a drop here and a missed blitz pickup there, and here we are talking about you know, who they should re-sign, and it's just, you know, that line is so, you know, it's so marginal, and you know, and a couple of different plays go your way where we're talking about, you know, how do you stop Saquon Barkley, and instead today we're talking about, you know, what are they going to spend that $25 million they got in cap space next year on?
Yeah, Nate, one of the things that we talked about last week, too, and you mentioned it after the fact, is we kind of discovered what we thought was different about this Bills team this year, that they weren't afraid to lose. And, man, even going into the game, there was a calmness. They looked calm. And I know that Josh Allen was, I mean, he was pretty amped up. You could tell at the beginning of the game. He wasn't very accurate. I mean, his first two passes were almost picks. Do you still believe that this is a team that moving forward won't have that fear of losing in order to be able to be a winning a championship caliber team?
Yeah, you know, I think they're right there, right? Again, I was just talking about these simple single plays here or there that go the other way, and we're talking about maybe a different outcome. And, you know, I think going into the game, there was a real sense of calm, and at the same time, you know, to start the game, Josh was jacked up, right? I mean, basically throws two lasers to start the game that, I mean, nobody in the stadium could have caught. Defender or offensive player, right? And then you watch, you know, them punt the ball on their first drive. They get the ball, then punt, And then the Kansas City Chiefs, like, just surgeons, walk down the field from the first play, 10 yards a chunk, 9 yards here, 11 yards here, 12 yards here. And that's the difference. I mean, it just truly is them coming out. They're so cool, calm, and collected. You have to be perfect when you're playing the Kansas City Chiefs, especially in the playoffs. It's really where they wait. Like, you heard a lot of these guys, Rousseau and Torrence, talk about how there were, you know, blitz. Basically, they were dummying that blitz the whole game. They were just waiting for the right moment to call that blitz on fourth down. And it just, I mean, goes to show you how far ahead Steve Spagnuolo is. And it's not just against Sean McDermott, it's against everyone. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, I don't take back anything I said. I do think they played with a very different mindset. But when it came down to it, the Bills gripped the ball tight in the situations that the Kansas City Chiefs were, cool as a cucumber. And that ends up, to me, end up being the difference.
Yeah, Nate, on that last drive, maybe you don't get to the fourth down play if they had James Cook on the field. I mean, was Cook dinged? I mean, he was having, dare I say, like a career game. He is carrying the Bills. He was the best playmaker. And I'm just wondering, why wasn't he out there to begin that drive?
Yeah, I don't know if there was injury. I don't know. I'll tell you this, that I didn't think they used him enough. And I think they've really all year done a great job threading the needle of kind of riding the hot hand. I think last week they probably should have ran Ty Johnson a little bit more. I thought he was kind of on and it was having a game. And this time it really clearly was James Cook. I mean, he was, I think at times, the best player on the field yesterday, and they did not do enough to get him to the volume that he probably needed to make a bigger impact on that game. But, you know, they come out on first down on that final drive and they run pitch and get blown up in the backfield. And I'm thinking to myself, man, that just, it's not the time for that play. Like, I need you kind of recognizing you got 3 minutes and two timeouts, and you got to make some plays down the field and get yourself in a position. And it just, the lack of urgency on that, and on some of the other ones too, looking back, there's going to be, you know, 12, 15 plays in this game where you just say, you know, come on, execute better, call a better play, whatever it is. But yeah, James Cook should have been on the field for more than he was. And I think looking back, it'll be kind of a disappointing end to what I think was, you know, a career year for him. And, you know, we'll see what the future holds for James Cook, but I think it's getting harder and harder by the day to consider a situation where you wouldn't try to get him extended on a second contract. I think he's earned it, and I think he's a big enough piece of this offense where, you got to keep going with him, and he's probably the future at the position.
You can never have enough good corners is what they say, Nate, and when we saw Benford get concussed, and that was a scary scene, knowing Kyrie Elam was going to be in there and probably going to be a target, somebody that they were going to go after, which they did. I mean, this is not a street-free agent we're talking about here. We're talking about a 2022 first-round pick that was a liability, that they knew exactly who to target early on in that game. Meanwhile, when you look at what the Chiefs have done, Trent McDuffie, the guy that the Bills wanted, was the guy that the Chiefs ended up drafting. The trade that became Xavier Worthy, who scored a touchdown, while Keon Coleman has one reception for 12 yards. Before you even talk about any of the plays on the field in yesterday's game, the way these rosters have been constructed, and I want to give Brandon Bean credit for putting together the talent that he has on this roster, but there have been some significant misses, and you could throw Dalton Kincaid in there after last night too if you want to, in the first round, in the early rounds here for the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, and again, you know, it's funny how fickle the game can be, because we're not talking about the shortcomings of drafts and what they did in the first round if a couple of plays go the other way. It's that razor thin line that is the difference. And, you know, I think of it this way, guys. It's, they've missed on first round picks, but I think it's easy to look at the misses they've had in the first round. And then you look at, well, look at the hit they had on James Cook in the second round. Look at the hit they got on Christian Benford, on Khalil Shakir. So, it's a conversation that can go both ways. And you look at and you say, you know, the first round's really where you got to hit, and they have not had success hitting in the first round. And yeah, I would absolutely put Dalton Kincaid in that conversation, because it wasn't to me yesterday that, you know, has, I think that should have started the conversation on Kincaid. It's, you know, this is a guy that coming out of the draft was touted as the guy with the best hands in the draft, and he struggled all season with drops. I thought last week against the Ravens, he had a monumental drop in that game. He had two bad drops in this game. So I don't know where you go with Dalton Kincaid. He's been the one guy they can't seem to really – I feel like everyone had a game this year. It was Matt Collins here, Khalil, and even Curtis Samuel had a game. The guy that didn't really have a game is Dalton Kincaid. It's a first-round pick, and Kyrie Elam was a – he was a disaster, like an absolute disaster when he had to come in for Christian Benford. And I don't know what they do there. I watched him on that first drive he was in. I'm thinking, how can the Bills keep putting him back out there? He's just not an NFL player. And to get draft a guy in the first round that 3 years later isn't worth anything on the open market, and you could cut and maybe he gets picked up as a street free agent that somebody would put into a camp battle. But this draft, I think, will be an incredibly important to have the extra second round pick. I think they've got to hit home runs on their first three picks this year because they need top end talent on the roster. I think there's holes, but again, this was a really good football team, a 13 win football team, and they're not going to lose a lot. But I do wonder, and I'm even, maybe extending this to a guy like Greg Rousseau, who I think has played really good football. Is a very good edge setting run defender. His worst game of the year, probably the worst game of his career yesterday. What they do with Vaughn and somebody I'm of the mind that, if you're going to take a swing and go for a Myles Garrett or a Max Crosby, and I think Greg Rousseau is part of a trade like that. And I think it's something the Bills really have to consider going into this offseason. But yeah, the draft and free agency and trades, all that good stuff. I think more likely than not, this is a team that is not going to really make a lot of dramatic changes. They're certainly not going to be making any changes with coaching staff. So I think if you're thinking that, you can probably just move on. They're not moving away from the coach.
And Nate, haven't heard when Brandon Bean will be giving, as required by the league, his season-ending press conference. I always find them interesting. He's not going to tell you directly what the plan is, but he does kind of give you some context and maybe a clue or two. But when that comes around, what questions would you like to hear asked of the Bills general manager?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you can ask about being critical, but I think the first question I'm going to ask him is, what was it about Xavier Worthy that didn't sell you guys? He would have brought, I think, a very different dynamic to this football team that, quite frankly, they missed yesterday and they missed all season long. And, I think Keon Coleman did not develop the way I think the injury helped or hurt him a little bit too. He had the momentum kind of after the Seattle game, and it just wasn't the same after he went out with injury. And what was it that made you comfortable giving the Chiefs an opportunity to take a player, whether they knew who they were going to draft or not? I think speed has to be a huge priority for this team and adding to their roster next year. And that's, I think, at the defensive back level, not just on offense, but on defense. I think the other question is, how do you guys go into next season the same way that Kansas City's gone into the last couple of seasons, which is, how do you remake yourself? How do you add the off-speed pitches? Because I think the thing the Chiefs showed yesterday is we've known, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes to be together for, 8 years? And we're watching plays and concepts that we've never seen them run before. That needs to be the same kind of thing the Bills do. And so I think those are the, personnel. And I just, for me, the thing I really want to know, and you'll never really know the answer to this, but what the heck was, sort of the reasoning behind them, allowing the Chiefs to move up and get a player that I think they should have been all over.
When you look at the list of unrestricted free agents, Nate, is there a name or two on the list that you think have to bring that guy back?
Yeah, Ty Johnson's one of them. Obviously, I think Reed Ferguson, you're going to bring back your long snapper. But I don't know. It's tough. I think about it this way. Ty Johnson has been a huge part of what they did offensively this year in the pass game. In the run game, but he is a core special teams contributor. Same thing with Matt Collins. I think I'd love to have him back in that fifth wide receiver role. Frankly, I think he was outplaying guys like, you know, Dalton Kincaid. And the other part about Kincaid, too, guys, too, that now that I'm thinking about it, to me, it was going to be he was going to be a story win or lose in this game. He basically didn't play 70% of the snaps. I didn't see the snap count, but I mean, he was not on the field. They had Matt Collins on the field significantly more than him. And that was eye opening to me. But all in all, Matt Collins, Ty Johnson, I think they need to completely remake that safety room. I love DeMar. I love what he's represented in this organization, but anything short of a depth piece moving forward, they really need to upgrade, I think, both over Taylor Rapp and DeMar Hamlin.
Yeah, it's hard to get a read on Cole Bishop. It's a tough position to kind of grade. Is there room for improvement yesterday? It wasn't like Cole Bishop's play stood out to me, but it wasn't helping the cause either.
Yeah, it's tough because the slow playing of his development this year, I think that they got lucky that he had opportunities to get meaningful snaps when, you know, both Rapp and, Hamlin missed time. It wasn't there for us. I got a second round pick. And you look at a guy like Cam Kitchens, who was drafted, I think, in the third round by the LA LA Rams. It was, a huge piece for them defensively in their turnaround defense. Their rookie draft class on the defensive side of the ball completely remade a defense that was losing literally the best player in the league over the last decade in Aaron Donald. So, you see a guy like Cam Kitchens and him be an elite level defensive back and at the safety position and has the flexibility. And then you watch Cole Bishop and it just doesn't, it didn't pass the eye test. And listen, he'll have an opportunity this offseason to kind of learn, but I really wouldn't tell you. I think he's a guy that is going to be an every down safety for them. He might be more of like a gadget player, special teamer. And that's going to be disappointing if that's the case for a guy who, again, went in the second round.
Nate Gary of the Buffalo Bills Radio Network, WGR, Odyssey Sports sister station, joining us in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia. You mentioned it earlier, Nate, and I think I agree with you. It's a wasted of calories if you're sitting here thinking to yourself, Sean McDermott needs to be fired or somebody on this coaching staff needs to be fired. But it does feel like a constant this season was at least once a game you had a pretty significant special teams blunder. And yesterday it was a punt return of 41 yards that led to a touchdown five plays later. Is Matthew Smiley, is special teams coordinator in this coaching staff due for an upgrade?
I think they're a couple of years past needing an upgrade. Let me throw a name at you that nobody probably knows, but Marty Biagi, he is the special teams coach of Notre Dame. As a Notre Dame fan, he is probably the best special teams coordinator in the country. What they were doing on special teams all season long, the fakes, the different looks. Like I'm looking at how can I turn my special teams into a weakness into a strength. And that's the first guy I'd be looking at. But I think they need to look long and hard at replacing their special teams coordinator this year and see what they can pull together for next year. But that's probably one of my primary focuses this offseason. They've got they need a big upgrade at that position.
Nate, how many hours of sleep did you get last night, bud?
Oh, let's see. I got home right around 1:30. Didn't really get into bed till about 2:15. Probably stayed awake, stared at the ceiling till about 3:30. And I was up at 6:15 for work today. So I would say we're probably running around 3 hours. Let me tell you, it wasn't a great 3 hours either. So, I am running on several energy drinks and general sadness. You know, when you're from Buffalo and you're a Bills fan, you learn to fuse that sadness as fuel. Walking in the office this morning, everybody sort of had the same vibe about him. It was a tough way to end it. There's no doubt.
Well, Nate, the time that you've given us this season is something that can't be replaced. We really appreciate you giving us the time that you gave this season. It was not the outcome we were hoping for, but it was one hell of a ride. It usually is with this era of Bills football that we're living in. It's a roller coaster ride that we can't wait to get back on again as soon as this league year gets underway and we can start talking about free agency and the draft and looking ahead to St. John Fisher.
Yeah, guys, it's awesome. I appreciate you know, kind of being a part of this with you guys, and it's my pleasure doing this with you, and looking forward to the off season and joining you guys throughout. But yeah, you know how to find me if you guys need anything.
Yeah, like we'll make sure you're not, you know, playing 18 that day. As soon enough, the snow will melt here, Nate. Looking ahead to next.
Oh man, I will be anxiously awaiting the days where I get to be outside hitting a golf ball. There's no doubt about that.
All right, bud. Well, enjoy the rest of your day. It's almost 5. You can come out of your office and resume normal life.
Sounds good to me, guys. Again, I appreciate it. Great season, and happy to join you guys when I can. And, go Bills or whatever.
Thanks, Nate.
There is Nate Geary at Buffalo Bills Radio Network.
That's where we're at. Go Bills or whatever.
Go Bills or don't. Whatever you want. I don't care.
Well, yeah, and he said that half joking, like, hey, I'm just going to lock myself in the office today because he had to get work done. How many people, you know, maybe not just being sleep deprived, but you're talking about this, getting coffee, talking about it in the cube next to you. I mean, I can't imagine this was the most productive day in Western New York.
The thing that has driven me crazy is, and it's the thing that everybody wants to talk about, that we won't spend a lot of time talking about, but it's the officiating. It's the thing that, because in my day-to-day, and you're maybe like me, where you just come across casual fans, they're not going to be able to break down why that 4th and 5 play didn't work, right? They're going to be able to look at a replay during the game and say, well, that should go our way, when the rule might say otherwise. That's the conversation that's fatiguing to me today.
Well, and again, when I see all your tweets, see the messages, it's not a discussion that goes anywhere. Should the officiating be better? Yes, it will. And will this actually lead to change? This is the interesting part. Well, I mean, is this going to, and we've been asking for this. You don't need the chain gang. That was remarkable last night, that they just looked at the video and you didn't have the dog and pony show, the chain gang coming out on the field to do that whole routine. Use technology. Put a chip in the ball.
Sean McDermott is on the competition committee. So I would imagine that there are some takeaways and some learnings from last night's game that could actually impact the way games are officiated in the future. I just can't. I can't listen to it. I can't hear, because it's in the grand scheme of a big game. And you mentioned it earlier, and I think it's a great point from Brownie and Tasker earlier. Like, every minute matters. Every play matters. And early in the game, Josh was amped up. That first series was ugly.
Well, and that's why you're the coaching staff. You have to know your quarterback. Hand the ball off. Make sure that you're just getting dialed in. I said this online. Call a design run for Josh. Let him take a hit. Let him kind of get into the game that way, because, yeah, when you're throwing the ball high and wide like that, that just means you're a little, it's the same thing when you're on the mound if you're a little wild. You're just too amped up.
Happy hour is next, although it doesn't feel like happy hour. It is a Monday that we're going to get through. We are getting through.
Hungover hour.
Yeah, well, you can join us at 866-4326. That's 585-866-4FAN. If you want to get it off your chest, we're here. We're going to get through it together as the Bills drop another heartbreaker at Arrowhead to the Chiefs, who advance to the Super Bowl with a chance at a three-peat, which, again, it's just nauseating. The people today that are also saying, I'm not watching the Super Bowl, I'll listen to it. I don't believe you, but I'll listen to it today.
I'll listen to it today, but I would ask you, what's the plan if you don't?
I don't believe you, but I will listen
There's no other sporting event that night you could go to or watch. How many things are actually going to be open in Rochester at that point?
We do have time if you want to join us at 866-4FAN. We'll get to a round of shots as well. Lots to unpack from Nate Geary, Ryan Talbot, as we continue to dissect the loss in the AFC Championship to the Chiefs as the Bills season comes to an end. More next on The Fan.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan, Rochester.